attention to 1 Samuel chapter 1 this morning. And again, we're honoring our mothers in this time together. I read about a woman who was pushing her child through a Walmart, and the child was just raising the devil. I mean, the child was just screaming, yelling, didn't want to be there. And the mother kept saying, "You can do this, Helen. It's okay, Helen. Calm down, Helen. Jesus is with us, Helen. You can do this." And she went through the line, and the woman said, "I can't believe you're so gentle with Helen." And the mother said, "I'm Helen. I'm Helen." And to all the Helens in the room, so glad that you've stuck it out. In the spirit of Mother's Day, I want to read to you about one of the great mothers in the Bible and just make a few comments. In 1 Samuel chapter 1, now there was a certain man of... Mosheim of the mountains of Ephraim of his, and his name was Elkanah, the son of Jeroham. He had a lot of other relatives that are not important to the story. And verse 2, and he had two wives. The name of one was Hannah. The name of the other one was Peninnah. And Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. This man went up from his city yearly to worship and sacrifice the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. Also, the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, the priests of the Lord, were there. Whenever the time came for Elkanah to make an offering, he would give portions to Peninnah, his wife, to all of her sons and daughters. To Hannah, he would give a double portion, for he loved Hannah, although the Lord had closed her womb. And her rival also provoked her severely to make her miserable because the Lord had closed her womb. So it was year after year when she went up to the house of the Lord that she provoked her. Therefore, she wept and did not eat. Then Elkanah, her husband, said to Hannah, "Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? And why is your heart grieved? Am I not better to you than 10 sons? Mr. Big Stuff, who do you think you are? Big Stuff, you're never going to get my love." So Hannah rose after they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh. Now Eli, the priest, was sitting on a seat by the doorpost of the tabernacle of the Lord. And she was in bitterness of soul and prayed to the Lord and wept in anguish. Then she made a vow and said, "O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your maidservant and remember me and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a male child, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor shall come upon his head." And it happened as she continued praying before the Lord that Eli watched her mouth. Now Hannah spoke in her heart. Only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. And therefore Eli thought she was drunk. And so Eli said to her, "How long will you be drunk? Put your wine away from you." But Hannah answered and said, "No, my Lord, I'm a woman of sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor intoxicating drink, but have poured out my soul before the Lord. Do not consider your maidservant a wicked woman, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief I have spoken until now." And then Eli answered and said, "Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant your petition which you have asked of him." And she said, "Let your maidservant find favor in your sight." So the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. Then they arose early in the morning and worshipped before the Lord and returned and came to their house in Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. And so it came to pass in the process of time that Hannah conceived and bore a son, called his name Samuel, saying, "Because I am asked of him from the Lord. Amen. Strikes me that Hannah's a completely contemporary woman, and the struggles that she has are struggles that women in the 21st century have in America, or many would have. The first struggle that she has is that she wants a child and she can't have one. The Bible says that Hannah's womb has been closed, and it's her, it's not Elkanah, it's an issue with her. And in that culture, having a baby was the primary way in which a woman's worth was established. I mean, everything in the culture revolved around women having baby. In your family, if you're going to have a wealthy family, if you're going to have a prosperous family, you've got to have children to work the field or to work the business. You have to have the extra hands. On top of that, if you're going to have a retirement plan, you got to have children. There wasn't a safety net, and if you got old enough where you couldn't plant the vineyard, where you couldn't plant the crops and you couldn't harvest them, you had to have somebody to do that for you, and that would be your children. Nationally, it was an issue of security, because they didn't have big guns, they didn't have cannons, they had people. And if you had a population that was not growing to the degree that the neighboring nations were growing, then it was an existential threat to your nation. You had to produce soldiers for the army. And you had to produce a lot of them, because the mortality rate was at least 50%. So if you wanted 5 children, you need to conceive 10 children. And so the women of that culture who could have babies were heroes. They were treated as heroes. They thought of themselves as heroes. And here is Hannah, and she can't have a child. And in fact, in verse 10 or 11, she calls it her misery. It's her affliction. Hard for us to maybe fully grasp the emotions that she was feeling, because, again, she lived in a collective culture and we live in a very individualistic culture. And so our value in culture, our worth, our status is based on individual qualities, based on talents, based on skill sets, based on wealth, based on appearance. But that was a collective culture, and your status was based on what you could do for the culture. Every part of your worth was based on how you were contributing to the good of the whole, and for a woman, that was having children. And here's Hannah, and she wants a baby. It's worth noting that she really wants a baby, and she is to be commended for that. She doesn't necessarily want a career, although there's nothing wrong with wanting a career. The Proverbs 31 woman is a career-oriented woman. There's nothing wrong with wanting or having personal ambition in life. But there is something, I think, that is attractive about a woman who says, before anything else in life, I would like to be a mother. And here she is, and she can't have a child. There are people perhaps in this room who can identify with Hannah's feelings as she dealt with that misery in her life. Something else about Hannah that is very contemporary is that she is in a season of messiness. I say season because it passes, and seasons do pass, but in this season of her life, it is a messy existence, because her husband, when Hannah apparently couldn't have children, he married another woman who could have children, and so he is polytheistic. He's a polygamist. He's a Mormon. He's a polygamist. And so there are two wives in the house. Now, again, in our culture, we look back on those cultures with a degree of pride and looking at them as a backwards people. I would say this in their defense. No doubt men outnumbered or women outnumbered men probably 60-40. Usually it's 50-50. But when you read about the brutal battles that they fought and the men that were killed in those battles, tens of thousands of men. It's not out of the question for men to be outnumbered 60-40, 3-2, which means if you have 300 women in a room, you only technically have enough men for 200 of them. 100 are left. And in a normal situation, the 100 may say, that's fine, we can do without a man. But seeing as how having children was an issue of security and was your retirement plan, I think probably a lot of women would say, well, all right, I guess I'll have to share a man. If it's come to that, I'll share a man. I'll get my kids. I'll throw the man away. But I'll live with the situation. And so I don't know that it was especially oppressive culture. It was, but maybe not to the degree that maybe we would think that it would be. But what was true for Hannah was that not only was she the second wife, but the other wife was a nasty woman. Her name was Penina. You even think of a woman named Penina and she sounds nasty. I bet she didn't shave her armpits. That's a nasty woman. Dear Lord, let there not be a Penina room. And it seemed like every time Elkanah looked at her, she had a baby. I mean, she has sons and daughters, so that's at least four. I mean, she's this fertile myrtle of a woman. And Hannah can't have any baby, and Penina keeps rubbing it in her face. Now, again, there are women, I think, who can't identify. We don't have polygamy, but people have said facetiously, we don't have, what we have is sequential polygamy. In other words, man doesn't have two wives at one time, but a man or a woman might have 2, 3, 4, 5 in a row, sequentially. And it does create problems, and God bless you ladies, God bless you men, but today's Mother's Day, so God bless you ladies who do, in the midst of having to raise your children, you got to put up with the second wife and the third girlfriend, and you got to deal with it as your kids come back from their weekend with dad. You got to deal with all the Penina stuff in the world coming back into the house. God bless you for that. Modern day problem, God bless you for having to deal with that. It's a season in your life, and the season can be messy. God bless you women who married your man and you didn't know that he was only half raised and you had to raise him the rest of the way. God bless you for enduring those seasons in your life for the sake of your family. My mom got married when she was 16 to dad, 17. Dad grew up in a fighting, drinking, carousing family in Ohio. And it was a rough family, and everything that is illegal or immoral, they did frequently. And dad didn't stop doing that after he got married. And the first 6 or 7 years of my mom's life was misery living with dad, until he was 23 and he found the Lord. And man, she stuck it out. She just stayed in there with him, and thank the Lord for that, because I didn't come along till year 19 of that marriage. So I owe her double. I owe her for giving life to me, and I owe her for sticking with dad before he had grown up. Thank you, Mom. Some of you, there might be a mother on your row who is still having to raise the man sitting next to her. Go ahead and see if you can figure out which one. Now, he'll be looking around because he don't know it's him, but she'll be looking straight ahead. Did you find him? And if you go eat dinner with your mother today, put your arm around her and say, Mom, was the pastor talking about dad today? If he was, thank you. Thank you for sticking with him in that season. And so here's Hannah. She can't have the baby. She's in this messy season of her life. And then every woman can identify with this. No man in her life seems to understand. Because she's weeping, she's concerned, she's crying, and Elkanah, her husband, in verse 8 says, am I not good enough for you? Am I not worth 10 sons? Like, look at me, honey. I'm a Greek god. Touch these abs. Is this not enough for you? Look at this beard. How many men have this kind of a mustache? Look at me, honey. Am I not enough? And then she goes to the temple and she's crying and she's weeping and she's not verbalizing. She's just, you know, her lips are moving, but she's not talking. And Eli the priest sees her and he goes over and says, I can't believe it. You come into the house of God drunk. Put away your wine, women. Woman, and here's a card. CR, Tuesday night, 7 o'clock, big group. Small groups at 8. I expect to see you there. But it's interesting that she says, first, I think it's 15. She says, no, I'm pouring out my heart to God. I'm pouring out, I think she says, life to God. And that's an interesting way to put it. She says, everything that's inside of me, all the hurt, all the pain, all the misery, I'm trying to pour it out to God. And as she's praying, sorry, I scared a kid over here. I'm sorry. Sorry. Tell him I'm not mad. I'm just doing it. As she's praying, it seems as though as she's wrestling with God, it seems like God asked her a couple questions. It's not in the text, but in her response, it seems like it's part of what she's wrestling with. The first thing that God asks her is, it seems to me, am I not enough? Because I think in verse, you got to get the order of this right. Verse 18, I believe it's 18. It says, so she prays and she ached and her face was no longer sad. And then later the baby comes. Now what we would say is the order should be, well, she prayed, God gave her a baby, and she wasn't sad anymore. But the Bible says she prayed and she wasn't sad anymore. And then later she had a baby. It's as though in that encounter, God, Elkanah wasn't enough, but God was enough. And you have that in the Bible. Hagar, who was the unloved wife of Abraham, and she's sent out of the house very similarly to what Hannah is facing because Sarah doesn't like her. And there in the wilderness, God comes to her and she's able to rebuild her life and to go back into a messy situation because she says, the God who has seen me has allowed me to see him. And in that encounter with God, she got something that she hadn't had before. It's what I think Leah gets in Genesis 29 when she keeps having babies and she names her babies because she's married to Jacob. Again, bad situation. And her first child is named something like, now he'll notice me. And then the second one is, now he'll see me. And the third one is, now he'll love me. And then she finally had the fourth baby. And it says, and now, and then she said, I'll worship God. And what she didn't get from her husband, she got from God. Something happened when she encountered God. It was as though God said to her, listen, I can be enough. Do you believe that? Do you believe that in all of your hurt and in all of your pain, if you had me in my fullness, that you wouldn't be sad anymore? I could give you the gift of happiness in giving you myself. And so Hannah prays, and she's not sad anymore, with or without the child. It's a powerful thing. And then it seems like the second question God asked her is this. If you have a baby someday, would you have it for me instead of you? Because there's nothing wrong with wanting a child. There's nothing wrong with, I mean, I think it's natural to want children till you have them. It's like, then it becomes debatable, but until you have them, it's nice. And, this is a deeper question, and it's important for Hannah because God has a special assignment in mind for her. Samuel's going to be the greatest man of God of his day, and he needs a special mother. And so the question, again, for Hannah is, if I give you a child, if this should happen, would it be for me or would it be for you? That's an important question. In fact, James chapter 4, verse 3 says this. You ask, you do not receive, because you ask amiss that you may spend it on your own pleasures. James is saying, he's of the thought here, that if you ask just for you, that's a barrier in the prayer being answered as it goes to God. And that's, a question that many of us are wrestling with in this room. God, let me get into this college. I need in this college. It's getting late. My friends are going here, and this is my dream college. This is where I want to go. Maybe in your wrestling, if you listen, God is saying, if I get you into that college, will it be about you making a lot of money or will it be about you doing my will on that campus and in your life? He said, God, give me influence. I need their minds to be changed. I need to be able to influence certain people to get where I need to be. And God may be well saying as you wrestle with that, is the influence for you or is it for me? If I give you influence, will you use it for me or will it be for your own pleasure and enrichment? Lord, I need money. You see the need. Well, is the money and status for you or is it for me? Is it part of my call on your life and fulfilling my calling on your life? Lord, give me a man. Who's it for? Is this marriage going to be a marriage that benefits the kingdom, or is this marriage going to be end up being an unholy deadlock on earth because both of you are trying to get all your happiness out of each other? Who's this thing for? Need a job? The question comes back and back and back is, who's this for? Is this just for you? Or are you asking in my name, for my sake, just for me too? What we find out is that Hannah says, Lord, this will be for you. If you'll give me a child, I'm at the point where I can say his head will never be shaved. Now, what this is a reference to is a Nazirite vow. In the Old Testament, not just anybody could be a priest. Priest had to be from the tribe of Levi. So if you were born in the 11 other tribes. There were 12 tribes in Israel. If you weren't born into the Levitical or the tribe of Levite, you couldn't be a priest. You couldn't dedicate your entire life to the service of God in the temple. But you could take a Nazirite vow and say, my entire life is dedicated to God. I know I won't be a priest, but I'll do something. I'll be a prophet. I'll work with the priest, but I'll do something. My entire life is going to be dedicated to the service of God, but I'm not a Levite, but it's going to be dedicated just the same. And she says, if you give me a son, I will give him back to you. I'll raise him for you. It's just not going to be about me, because I'm fooling myself if it's not something about me. But it's going to be primarily about you. I'll give him back once he has been raised. And so she does. Samuel is raised. He's taken to the temple. He's taken to the tabernacle. Eli, the priest, raises him, instructs him in the Lord, and Samuel becomes this towering figure in the Bible. Some of you, I think, are wrestling with that today. Stand with me. You know, when I was growing up, Mother's Day used to be one of the great altar call services in the church. The preachers would get up and say, if you're thankful for your mama, why don't you come down here and give thanks for her? Of course, anybody with a mother in the room had to go. As a bait, it's like, I'm not thankful for you. I see you over there. I'm not thankful for anything you did. So everybody with a mama in the room had to go pray, you know, and give thanks. I mean, that's a dirtbag thing for a preacher to do. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to say it like that. But I will say this. If you had a godly mother, if you had a mother that in any way resembled Hannah, who wanted you, who loved you, who told you about Jesus, there ought to be something inside of you that wants to give gratitude to God for her, because she was the great blessing in your life. I mean, mothers always get blamed by the psychiatrist. If anything good is happening in your life, you got to credit your mother too. And so I wonder, again, I'm not trying to manipulate you, but this is a great day to kneel. If you haven't done that in a while, and say, Father, thank you for my mother. Maybe today also you've got a mom and she's going through a difficult place. She's hurting. She's in pain. She's going through her own struggles. You just want to come down and pray for your mom. The Lord will see her through this issue. Some of you have moms in a hospital room today. I'm going to pray for them.